Hey everyone, you're listening to the Working Triathlete Podcast with Derek Stone and Conrad Geringer. This podcast is devoted to helping you find maximum performance with deliberate efficiency. Hey Conrad, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. It is my birthday.
Had to throw that one in there.
Not even thinking about that in our pre-podcast discussions that didn't come up. But I'm 35 years old now, so I'm old. Official.
Yeah, it sneaks up on us.
I'm still going strong. It does. Little wisps of gray hair. Takes a little bit longer to recover from workouts compared to when you're 22 years old, but 35 is still young. Let's be real. I was talking to an athlete yesterday, and he was saying that he's looking at you. You know, you just took your pro card and you're 35. So people are, he was a semi-pro soccer player, and it's interesting because soccer players are pretty young, but you know, he brought up the fact that in triathlon you can be really competitive as you age, certainly into late 30s and early 40s. If you look at Jan, we all know this, but it's fun. On the trainer yesterday, I watched the recap of Norseman. I'm a little late, a few months late. Obviously, that race happened a while ago, but Sebastian Kienle was doing sort of his victory lap, so to speak. This is his last year racing. He's 39 and he did Norseman this year, and he got sent. The guy who won it, he's a Norwegian, and I think, is this the third time in a row he's won it? But he was a former pro cyclist, and he's won Norseman few times. He sort of specializes in it. But point being, you know, you can do this sport your whole life. So, but yeah, it was a big weekend in triathlon. We had Kona on Saturday. And so the women, the best women in the world, went head to head. And it was a pretty exciting race. Well, maybe not exciting in that Lucy Charles went wire to wire, but did you watch it or track it?
I watched a lot of it and obviously tracked it as well. But I mean, yeah, I think you nailed it. It's exciting in one way to see a person go wire to wire, which is nearly unheard of. But you know, there was really, you know, it gets really exciting when there's a shift in the leaderboard, especially at the front of the race. And we didn't see that. So obviously kudos to her. She was, I think, the runner up four times, you know, so
four times.
Huge, huge day for her to win it. But you know, I was really, really intrigued to see how Taylor Knibb would do, obviously her first full distance race. And, that was pretty exciting just to watch her perform. I mean, I'd say really, really well on a stage like that. You know, yeah. First full distance, you know, in Kona, you know, did really well.
She did extremely well. For your first full distance to be at Kona is pretty insane. Kona is like nothing else. I always say it's a hellscape, because it is. I mean, the Queen K, it's hot. It's just black lava all around. It's extremely humid and hot and windy. It's like you're in a food dehydrator or something with air circulating, but that air is so hot and humid. But she had a good race. I think she faded at the end of the run, but you know, 51 minute swim, 4:34 bike, which I think was the second fastest bike behind Lucy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lucy had the fastest swim, she had the fastest bike, and then she went 2:57 on the run, which is quick, obviously. Knibb was fourth overall in the race, and you know, she ran 3:05. So I think she was second into T2.
Yep.
Right?
That's correct.
So she was
That's
in
correct.
Second for a while, but it takes a little bit to learn how to run the marathon in an Ironman well. You know, pacing comes into play. Nutrition is massively important, so important. I know the athletes we work with, we obsess over it for Ironman because it is as important as fitness and knowing how to ride your bike, knowing how to take nutrition is just as important. So, but yeah, Lucy finally got the W and she held off a very fast closing Ann Haug. So it was, Ann had an incredible run. She ran 2:48.
So fast.
That's absurd. So very impressive run by her. Really, really. I mean, that has to be a women's run course record.
I think so. Yeah. Cause,
I didn't confirm that. What was the record before?
I think Miranda had it before, it's an old record.
252?
Yeah, I think so.
I think of Miranda as having run 2:52, but I don't know what, you know, if Ann broke that or not. I'll look it up, but
yeah. So, but I think some other interesting things too that happened in the race, or like obviously us being in the States, it was pretty cool to see 5 U.S. women in the top 10 as well. So it's some dense females on this side of the world, mm-hmm. which is pretty cool. Was there anything interesting that you saw during the race that,
Well, I know Taylor Nib got a penalty for accidentally littering, which, you know, that maybe changed the dynamics. Maybe it caused her to mentally cause a lot of mental stress and anxiety. So she had, as I understand it, on the bike, that could have been a factor. You know, if she was about that in the run, you know, somebody passes her and she's like, man, I could have been a minute farther up or something.
Yeah.
But
helmet too.
Did you see anything?
Yeah. She didn't have an aero helmet on.
Really?
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
Interesting.
You know, probably from a heat perspective, I'd imagine they did some type of an analysis to stay cool, but
maybe the way she carries her position, maybe an aero helmet is not that much more aerodynamic. I guess it's always a question mark of heat, discipline, aerodynamics, but it seems like aerodynamic, the aero benefits kind of trump the heat dissipation. But yeah, maybe they did the analysis and she's an outlier in some way. I did not notice that. I mean, was it a full blown aero helmet or was it sort of, or road helmet, or was it one of those aero road helmets?
It was definitely an aero road helmet.
Got it. So maybe she was like splitting the difference, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm sure there's still a benefit, but I thought that was interesting. But also, I think there's a point where she paused at one of the aid stations too to get the nutrition she wanted, which mm-hmm. I think was probably a smart decision, you know, especially when it's your first full, you know, taking in that buffet, you know, during the bike ride. So, right. But overall, I think, you know, first time Ironman event, she executed really well. And obviously a pretty exciting race overall.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was exciting. As I was talking to Alex Leandri, another working triathlete coach, on her long run, and she was like, you know, the women's field was way more stacked than the men's field this year. And I think that she's right. You had 14 women break 9 hours. I have the top 10 pulled up. So the top 10 definitely smashed 9 hours.
Top 16 did.
Top 16.
Yeah.
So, and Lucy broke the course record. So, and then Anne was only 3 minutes behind her. So it was a pretty exciting race, I think. You have Lucy Charles first and second, Laura Phillip third, Taylor Nibb fourth, Daniela. We should talk about Daniela a little bit. I know that I heard rumors that she's retiring soon. You know, she's late 30s and has been obviously arguably the GOAT, maybe not even arguably. I think she is. I would classify her, I think, as the greatest of all time right now in long course. Just she's won more world championships than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to argue differently. But a top five finish is impressive. She's been towards the top for a while. So really, really strong race from her. And then Chelsea Sodero was second. And I think that there was, I know on the, I don't think Chelsea had the strongest bike, it appears. So I don't know if something happened there, but yeah, and then she ran a 2:53, which was a very fast run. I looked it up. So Marinda Carfrae, her run course record was 2:50.
Okay.
So, and broke that this year. So until this year, Marinda actually held the bike course record. So.
But her bike course or run course?
Or sorry, run course record.
Yeah. So. I remember I also read something about Daniela not. What I saw was she said this would be her last Kona. So my assumption is she's going to race Nice and then maybe no more beyond that. You know, we don't know. But yeah, you're right. Like what Alex said, like the women's field was stacked. It like there, everyone showed up, like no one was injured, you know, at least that I can think of. So everyone was able to toe the line that we all know of. And, that's a true world championship, you know, when you're able to get everyone to the start line healthy and ready to race.
Yeah, it's it was a fun race to track. And also shout out to Sarah True. She got top 10, which is pretty good. I know she struggled in the heat a little bit in Ironman's past, but she did really well. It's Sky Munch. There were a bunch of athletes from the US in the top 10. So obviously Germany dominant had two in the top three in Anne and Laura. And then, wow. But in the top 10, the USA, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 out of 10. I didn't realize that until sort of looking at the results right now.
Seeing the American flag on there. Yeah, I know.
Like that. So the American women, they are showing up pretty cool. But so this was fun. And then a working triathlete did very well at the race. Katie Lance, do you want to talk about her race?
Yeah. So Katie's an athlete I work with, and she's been an awesome athlete to work with. Like just talk about someone that just does the work and executes everything to a T. Like, you know, this has been she was fast, you know, before I started working with her. But this has been an awesome year for her. You know, she had a breakout race in Finland, went 4:33 and performed really well at USAT Nationals. And, you know, when we were talking about the race, I think the Tuesday or Wednesday before, you know, I was like, you've already had great performances this year. You just need one more and you've put the work in and you are ready. And she ended up breaking 10 hours. And I mean, like just watching the race unfold and just watching the tracker, like she just executes everything perfectly. You know, right. She knows her body. She knows how to listen to it. She fueled really well. And she was also patient too. You know, that's a big thing during these races, these championship races, Ironman races. And especially in Kona when it's hot, like a lot of people might start the run a little too hot. Or too fast and they fade, but super proud of her performance. And I know she's excited and she's already eager to tackle the next one. So Really excited to see what she does moving forward, but we have some big plans and we can't wait to see it unfold.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really balanced performance, really strong. 102 swim, 510 bike, 337 run, and pretty well paced. So really impressive run, well, and bike and swim from her. So congrats, Katie. Awesome performance. And other working triathletes did well, and everybody finished strong. So shout out to Nika and Ginny. Everybody showed up and battled the course. Everybody prepared well and executed well. So it was a good showing. And then we'll see what happens next year for the men, but as the women go to Nice. But it's interesting when we talk about, when we think about Ironman and the changes that we've seen, such as moving the world champs, splitting them up, Nice Kona, and other developments. And Ironman made an announcement last week about the 2024 Ironman Pro Series, which is a pretty interesting development. And it seems like it's their way to compete with the PTO. And we know that the PTO series has picked up steam. And the way that that works, so in our last podcast or two podcasts ago, we talked about it a little bit, where the PTO is partnering with World Triathlon for and creation of a long course, basically world series, and there will be five PTO events and a world championships, and the winner is crowned based on points over the whole series. Ironman is doing the same thing. So I know that you're potentially, well, we're all interested in what's going on, but I know that you dug in. So do you want to explain the series, how it's working now?
Yeah. So like from a high level view, you know, they've selected 18 different races around the world that any pro athlete can take part in. And, but the top five performances count towards their points. So, you know, this does have a blend of the 70.3 distance and the full distance. However, athletes can only use three full distance races as like points to kind of accrue to get that final score. You know, so 70.3, you know, is, you know, the winner is, they get 2,500 points, a full, they get 5,000 points. Then every second after that, you know, is a point is removed for the following finishers. So if someone finished 5 seconds behind first place, they would get 2,495 points, with the difference of the world championships adding a little bit more. I think the Ironman world champs is worth 6,000 and the 70.3 is worth 3,000. So a few more points for those bigger races. But when you look at the calendar, you can see it's heavily based in the U.S., you know, the first part of the season. And I think this is designed, you know, from a strategy to get athletes to kind of travel from continent to continent. So, you know, it kicks off with Oceanside and then Texas, which is interesting because those are only a few weeks apart. But then you have the North American Championships in St. George, you know, right after Texas. And then I'm not going to list all the races, but you can pull it up on Ironman.com and review them. But, you know, halfway through the season, you can see there is European races. And then towards the end of the season in October and December, you kind of hit the Oceania area, you know, Australia, New Zealand, Hawaii. And so I think they're really trying to get athletes to, one, tackle some more full distance races, but also incentivize them to race more frequently in this series. And I think this is going to be really good for the sport. You know, there's anything with more money, obviously, I think it's going to allow pros to pursue it. I can see a lot of athletes that maybe like a step, you know, that maybe aren't ready to break through yet. They have a better opportunity to make money. So maybe they have more time to devote to the sport to make money. But I also see it splitting up different types of athletes too, between the PTO and Ironman. Obviously the PTO distance is, you know, a middle distance race with a heavier emphasis on the swim. So I think we are going to see different types of athletes kind of target each series a little bit differently, you know, with the exception of the PTO, where I think you have to have an invite anyway. But at the end of the day, I think it's exciting. I'm really eager to see what happens with the rest of the calendar. You know, Ironman has announced the pro races through June 30th. I'm eager to see if there's additional races in North America that are not part of the series, because I could see athletes also targeting non-series races to try to make money or try to get a slot to Worlds. So good stuff for the sport, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. I think that the tough thing is going to be athletes getting in those five races, because like you said, there are 18 designated Ironman and Ironman 70.3 events that basically count, and then athletes do five of them. So when we look at just the schedule, to get five athletes, either need to, like if you think about US athletes, they basically have to do every single 70.3 in the US that's on the list. And that's really tough, because they're all within, like, you know, just basically less than 2 months. And then, but they can do an Ironman. So athletes are essentially being forced to either do an Ironman or travel, you know, from Europe to the US or vice versa to get in the numbers. So, but to your point, I think the most interesting thing, if you're a fan of the sport, is how is this going to impact the PTO series? Which athletes are going to target the Ironman series versus the PTO series? That's the big question. When we break it down, I mean, if you finish first in the 2024 Ironman Pro Series, you know, man or woman, you've earned $200,000. Second, $130,000. Third, $85,000. Fourth, $70,000. Fifth, $50,000. All the way down to 10th, you get $10,000. And then beyond that, you know, 11th to 50th rank, you get $5,000. So there's a total of $1.7 million Ironman is investing in this. And just as total pro series prize money based on final standings, they're still giving out money on a race by race basis, as they always do. So it's a pretty big investment, and, you know, they're making a move. And, you know, I always want, it makes you think, obviously they did an analysis and, you know, they hope to maybe make their money back, but I think maybe out of necessity, they have to do this just to, because they have a competitor, the first, I think, real viable competitor in the PTO series, wherein a lot of athletes, age group athletes, can sign up for these, for each continental race, and they can qualify for the world championships at the PTO level. So this is a way to maintain some hype. You keep the pros involved in Ironman, because even though the sport is amateur driven and most of the money that goes to Ironman is because age groupers pay them, you know, $400 to $500 to do a 70.3 and $1,000 to do an Ironman, there's still a part of it that is, you know, athletes like watching pros go fast and follow them on social media and look at what equipment they're using and make choices based on that. So it's interesting. We'll see how it goes. Like you were sort of talking about how certain athletes are just going to be stronger at 70.3 versus the PTO distance. So I know before the call you said maybe slower swimmers. You think about athletes like, you know, maybe like Lionel or Sam Long, they might go all in on this pro series, this Ironman pro series, although we'll see if Lionel does that or if he's just mad, rightfully so, I would argue.
Right.
at Ironman for the World Championships snafu. But yeah, I mean, those guys could certainly crush this series, but I think it's very difficult to get into a PTO race. And there are a lot of very, very good pro triathletes who can't get into those races. So I think that we're going to see a lot of really strong athletes from all over the world competing at these US 70.3s early on in the season. And then obviously later in the season, later in the, I guess, late spring, early summer, where the European races go off as part of this pro series, we'll see more. I think the fields are going to be deeper because people are going to be chasing those points.
I think you're right. I think we're going to see deeper fields. I also think we'll see even more breakout performances too. Like I said, I think if people have the opportunity to make more money, they might chase it. And I apologize if you guys hear some background noise. It's the kids screaming back there, but it's going to be interesting. And but I think the other thing that we really haven't touched on that Ironman has even talked about yet is the coverage. And this is where obviously a lot of other professional sports earn a lot of money is through broadcasting, you know, live events. And, you know, this is an opportunity to capture new age group athletes if they're seeing people race and being able to see a story unfold. And I think that's going to be really important for the sport as well. Cause it's been an issue, I think, in the past, and we're finally seeing better coverage of races, just based on the technology and things like that. So, that will be a really good enhancement as well if there's more events that are being covered just for the general public to review too.
Right. I think that good coverage at events is important, and also coverage of the athletes themselves. You know, when I look down the Ironman World Champs finish list, I look at each athlete and I think about how, you know, we sort of know a lot about them and their personality, and it's more meaningful than just seeing a name, so to speak. Like we see Lucy at the top, we see the four races where she got second and she finally overcame it. We think about the stress fracture she experienced and how she fought back. And it was a journey here to, you know, perform really well against the field. You know, we see Anne as she's throwing down incredible performances, and she's been certainly in the game quite a while, late 30s. Laura Philip and her amazing Ironman performance at, was it Hamburg last year? I forget. There was a European Ironman where she went extremely fast. And obviously Nib, Riff, just Sedero, many, we know a lot about them. So they're characters, and it's more meaningful like when they go up against each other. They aren't just sort of these anonymous names. And the PTO did a good job, I think, humanizing the athletes, exploring their backgrounds a little bit and making profiles on them. So that's going to be helpful. And I think Ironman should pursue that as well, sort of highlight the athletes and their lives in general, not just what they're doing in racing.
Yeah. Yep. So overall, though, high level, it's going to be good for the sport. I think we're going to see we're going to see some breakout performances, and I think we're going to see a lot more racing, and that's good. That's good for the brand. That's good for the sport as a whole. And even like next year is really interesting because it's an Olympic year too. So not only do you have the Ironman series, then you have this PTO series, then you're going to have people chasing points for the Olympics, and then obviously building up for the Olympics as well. So all three distances going to be a little bit different. So we're going to see a lot of racing next year.
Yep. It's going to be good. And then anything else you want to talk about related to Ironman or the pro series?
I think we covered it there. So, you know, I'm interested, obviously, but a lot of people have been talking about it, and it'll be cool to see how everything unfolds this year and how people select races as well.
Yeah, it will be. And last thing that we wanted to talk about today was nutrition and specifically sweat testing. And this has been at the top of our mind because, you know, we watch athletes competing at Kona, you know, we coach athletes who did Kona, and we at Kona, like if I'm giving somebody tips on how to maximize performance at Kona or what to think about or obsess over, it is the nutrition plan, specifically the hydration plan. And obviously precision fuel and hydration, they've become sort of the titans in the realm of hydration and nutrition and fueling in the triathlon world. And they their stuff is top notch. And so we partnered with them recently, and we do sweat testing in Nashville. So we launched that. And what that means is if you come into the lab here at Transformation Lab, we can do sweat testing. So we measure the amount of sodium that you lose per liter of sweat. And having this information can be invaluable when you're developing your fueling and hydration plan during the race. So we wanted to highlight that service that we're offering in Nashville. You can sign up for it on the Working Triathlete website. If you Google, sweat testing Nashville or sweat testing Working Triathlete, it will show up. And we've tested many, many athletes. And I mean, over the years, athletes have done sweat testing who we've worked with, but it really exposes some interesting, I think, considerations that athletes have to take to heart. Because one athlete, he tends to cramp a lot and sweat a lot. And, you know, but he also, his sweat concentration is very, very high. It's it was over 1800. I took the test. I'm notoriously a heavy sweater and the brunt of a lot of jokes at group workouts that I participate in, because I'm soaked all the time. You know, I sweat 1500 milligrams, over 1500 milligrams per liter, which is very, very high. We've seen you can sweat as little as 400 milligrams per liter, all the way up to about 2000, I mean, perhaps more. And one's sodium intake or nutrition plan should adapt to that. Somebody who's a light sweater and only has, you know, 500 milligrams of sodium per liter of sweat, their nutrition plan needs to look a lot different than somebody sweating 6 pounds an hour who has a concentration of, you know, 1500 milligrams of sodium. So we've seen the insights have been powerful, and you know, we've adapted fueling in training and racing as we consider, you know, the concentration of sodium in an athlete's sweat. So I recommend that all athletes get their sweat tested, especially if they're long course athletes or high volume athletes, because supplementing at the appropriate amount can make a big difference. And, you know, it's not that expensive. You know, we spend thousands of dollars on bikes and race wheels and things like that. And, you know, this is a test that you can do, and you do it once and that's it. Because although sweat rate can vary discipline to discipline, depending on the time of year or your level of fitness, the sweat rate can vary, but sweat composition doesn't vary at all, really. So this is a one and done test, and it includes a consultation. So, you know, if you're in Nashville, if you're traveling to Nashville, just, you know, reach out to us, set up a sweat test. Or if you're not located in this area, Precision Hydration has partnered with labs all over the world, and you can get this done, and it's powerful stuff.
So I know you've been with a few athletes this weekend, performing the test. Can you walk us through the protocol and how you capture the data?
Yes. So it's interesting because when people hear sweat test, I think they think sweat rate, and they picture coming into the lab and riding on the bike or running on the treadmill and us capturing sweat that rate that way. But we actually don't look at sweat rate. We can do a sweat rate test here, but it's just, there's no reason to do it at the lab essentially, because your sweat rate is going to vary depending on intensity and discipline and conditions that you're training in. So we encourage athletes to track sweat rate separately, but like in training, and get multiple data points there. But when athletes come into the lab for the sweat, the sodium concentration test, they basically sit down and we put two, if you think of E-stim, basically two discs on their forearm, and we run a very, very mild, basically electrical current through it, and it causes your skin under one of those discs to sweat a little bit. And then that takes 5 minutes. And then we put a sweat catching disc over the area that's sweating. And there's tiny tubing in this disc, and there's a blue dye. So it's kind of fun to watch the tube, which is a spiral tube in the disc, sort of fill up with basically blue sweat. And once that fills up to the appropriate level, we remove the tubing and we run the sweat in there through our sweat machine. And we know exactly how many milligrams of sodium you lose per liter of sweat. And like I said, it is varied. Most athletes are in that 800 to 1100 range. So if you combine that knowledge with sweat rate, which we work with athletes to establish depending on discipline and race intensity and all that, we make recommendations on pre-race or pre-training big day electrolyte loading. And we found that to be really helpful for athletes, especially those who have high sweat rates. You want to get 1500 milligrams of sodium the night before, and then the morning of that. That overloading can help. Obviously you pee a lot of it out, but you want your stores topped off when you toe the line. And, but we also, it also influences the concentration of sodium that you're taking in per liter that you're drinking on course. So we advise athletes on, precisely what they should do, or a starting point on what to take in training. And then you obviously want to test and make sure that works and potentially push the limits of how much fluid and sodium you can take in if you're doing an Ironman in hot conditions. And, everybody's different. We essentially want to finish a race with certainly less than 5% of your body weight in sweat loss. Ideally, we want to limit the percentage of body weight you lose in sweat to 2 or 3%. But we know that once you get past 4%, we see a pretty steep performance decay. So, we run the numbers and we dial it in. And if you pay attention to this and you're meticulous with testing and training and practicing race nutrition and the race specific workouts that go into an Ironman or 70.3 or an Olympic distance race, it can make a difference. We recommend products and a protocol that could work, but we give you the guidance, whether it's pH, precision fuel and hydration, which we're big fans of, or whatever your favorite, electrolyte supplement is, or fueling, like sports drink or gels, or whatever. Like, we'll dig into all of that with you to make sure that you're taking in what you should be taking in to maximize performance.
So yeah, I love it. I know the athletes that I had tests already, they're pretty excited about it. And obviously being scientific and understanding exactly what they need gives them confidence too in their race strategy and their execution on race day.
Yeah. I mean, Caroline, she's on our elite team. She came in and she identified that she's, a fairly salty sweater, really high sweat rate. We need to increase electrolyte concentration by 50% in her fluid that she's taken in. So that's important. Another athlete, Kyle, his sweat rate is extremely high. He deals with cramping a lot, and the concentration of sodium loss in a sweat was around 1800 milligrams per liter of sweat loss. That's really high, and a sweat rate is really high. So there's very little room for error if he's doing a long course race. Like, he needs to be deliberate. And, you know, for him, you know, taking in about 1500 milligrams of sodium per liter of fluid that he's taken in during a race is essential. And it's essential to kind of push the limits, see if can he take in 1.2 liters per hour. Can he take in 1.5? Can he take in 2 liters per hour? It's possible for some athletes to do that, at least for, you know, a couple of hours, or on the bike. So the findings can really transform the way you approach hydration and fueling. So it's fun. It's fun to come in and take the test and see it, so that the machine that we use is medical grade. It's the same exact machine that's used for diagnosing cystic fibrosis. So this is not like you sweat on a patch and send it in type thing. I mean, this is the gold standard in sweat testing. This is, you will know precisely with, you know, perfect accuracy what the sodium concentration in your sweat that you're losing is. I've had athletes get just outrageous prescription. Like, if they do the gauze, you know, you sweat, or the Gatorade patches, like you sweat a patch and send it out. That is nowhere near as accurate. Like, I'm not saying it's useless, but it's approaching useless. And so, you know, it's sweat testing with this methodology, it is the most advanced, sort of cutting edge, and most accurate way to assess the concentration of sweat that you're sodium that you're losing in the sweat. So yeah, so take advantage of it. You should do it. Now is a good time of year, as races are wrapping up, and maybe you have a little bit more time to come in and get the test done.
Yeah, good stuff.
But yeah, so we are very, very excited about that. And what else? What else is going on the rest of the year for the squad? I know this weekend, North Carolina, we have a bunch of athletes racing there at 70.3 North Carolina. And then we are going to have a big crew at Clash Daytona. I know that's going to be a big race for us. And we're pumped about that. That's going to be a fast one. We're going to have a lot of athletes gunning for all-time PRs.
Oh, yeah. So
it's going to be we'll see what the weather's like. I heard that the course is a little bit different this year than in past years. It's the long course national championships for the US. So that's another potential reason to do it. And athletes are going to fly on that fast, flat course.
Yeah, it's a cool venue. I mean, you know, if you're into NASCAR, it's one thing, but even if you're not into NASCAR, you know, the whole, I guess the swim takes place in the infield in the lake. And then you do one lap around the racetrack and you exit on the bike. Like Conrad said, it's pancake flat. You come back and then the whole run is, you know, on the racetrack, or there's like a road track as well that it kind of winds around. So it's a cool venue. It's going to be really exciting for a lot of athletes in December, and especially this weekend too. Like, we have a lot of athletes racing in North Carolina, so two big weekends for us. And it's interesting because, like, you think of like October, November, December as being, you know, the fall and the winter, but a lot of people have, you know, pushed the season a little bit longer now, and it's kind of cool when we have the opportunity to race in the winter time in the United States.
Yep, agreed. It'll be a good way to cap off the year ahead of the holidays. After, you know, I'm going to cross that line and I'm going to celebrate with probably, so, well, it'll be post Thanksgiving. So maybe like a turkey sandwich or something left over.
There we go. Perfect.
Yeah. So it'll be a fun one. Well, cool. Anything else we need to cover?
Right, I think that's it for now. You know, we covered a lot today, and But yeah, if anyone has any questions or anything that they want us to chat about, you can reach out to us at info@workingtriathlete.com. Or if you're looking for a coach, we, you know, we have a few that are taking on additional athletes. Again, you can reach us at info@workingtriathlete.com.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
See ya.